We're doing Tamil Dvora, and we're up to the fourth chapter. And in this chapter, Rav Moshe Cordoviro starts divulging all kinds of Kabbalistic concepts. And before we start reading it, we have to have a small introduction to learning Kabbalah. So we're going to begin with a few quotes. There was a great rabbi in the 16th century, the Maharal Bach. He was the one who led the machloket against reinstating the smicha. He was the son of the Ein Yaakov. His father was expelled from Spain. And he writes the following in a tshuva of his, the 75th tshuva. And he writes, Ve'al asher niflata al elu hadorshim barabim umfnei amei haaretz besfirot uvgilgul v'shar dorim acharim mesetei Torah. And that which you were astounded that there are people who will speak publicly in front of people who are not learned about the different sfirot, the different countings, that's one Kabbalistic concept, and Gilgul, it's another Kabbalistic concept, and other concepts of the hidden concepts of the Torah. Gam be'inai yipale hafle v'afele. In my eyes too, it's a wonderment of wonderments. V'atidim em niten et adin. And they will ultimately pay the price. God will take them to court over the fact that they spoke this way publicly. V'kvar karati tagar alehem b'kundres shekatavti l'cha ze yamim rabim. And I already called out an argument against them in the special compilation that I wrote you a while ago. V'veti ra'ayam ha'rishonim, and I brought proof from the earlier generations of rabbis, shayu chachamim be'emet bedvarim ke'ilu, shem kivshono shel olam, that they really were wise and understood these secrets of the Torah. Halo em ha'ramban minosek elav, and an example is the Ramban and the others. Ve'lo dibru be'em ki'im be'remez v'chida. And they only make mention in passing and an allusion to the Kabbalistic concepts. Kachi darkan shel habaim acharav yodei Torah ve'notzrei Teuda. This is the way of those that come after the Ramban, those who really know, and those who maintain the way a person's supposed to be. So the Maharal Bach speaks very strongly against publicly expounding on Kabbalistic concepts. Next, we're going to quote from another tshuva, a great Sfardi rabbi, the Rav Poalim, and he writes, "Umi gadol lanu merabenu ma'achuzal, Rav Chaim Vital, the disciple of the Arizal, asher samach rabenu agadol shtei adav alav," that the Arizal taught him and then placed both his hands on him as the rabbi to follow. "Umasar asher lo biyado," and he gave over to him the secrets that he had acquired. Ve'im kol ze katav b'shar kavanot b'drush ha'omer, and nonetheless, Rav Chaim Vital writes, v'lachen hasod hazeh tzarich la'alimo, and therefore this secret must be concealed, im mipat atzmo, whether for its own sake, v'im mipnei she'en anachnu yudim amitato, or because we don't really know the truth of these secrets. Afilu tipat gargir shel chardal min hadrush ahu, we don't even know the, like a kernel of mustard seeds are very small. We don't even get a mustard seed's understanding of these secrets. And says the Rav Palim, when he gives this analogy of a mustard seed, he really is giving a deep analogy. He didn't just choose a small seed. And if this is what he writes in one place, so we can derive that in other places as well. The words of the Kabbalah are very deep and elusive, and when we read them we have to know that they are not to be interpreted literally. I want to end with the Ramban, who was famous for his knowledge of Kabbalah, and his Ramban, Nachmanides, and his allusions to Kabbalah and his explanations of the Torah. The Ramban, in his introduction to his explanation of the Torah, he writes the following. V'ani hineni mevi bivrit ne'emana, and behold, I am bringing you with me in a trusted covenant, V'hi anotenet etza ogenet lakol, and that is that I'm going to give advice that is fitting for everyone. Lekol mistakel v'sefer hazeh, whoever is going to look in my work, says the Ramban. Leval yisbol svara, a person shouldn't think he understands. Val yachshov machshavot bedvar mikol ha'omazim sh'ani kotev b'sitra Torah. He shouldn't think that he can understand all the different delusions that I write as I explain the Torah and I allude to the hidden aspects of the Torah. Ki ani modio ne'emana, for I am letting a person know and I'm saying it in trust, shelo yusgu davar v'lo yivadu klal v'shum sechel uvina, that these concepts cannot be attained at all and cannot be understood if one is going to try to understand them using his own intellect and understanding. Zulati, unless a person is taught mipi mekubal chacham leozen mekubal mevin, a person can only attain the understandings of Kabbalah if he is taught by someone who has Kabbalah and the teacher is wise and the listener has understanding. But to just read a work, you can't understand it. And here's the key, the Ramban adds. V'hasvara bahen ivelet machshava mo'elet rabat hanizakin mona'at hato'elet al yomar bashav nit'e ki lo tvo'eu b'svarotav rak ra'a. And when one tries to apply his own understanding to the Kabbalistic concepts, then he should know that he is erring and he can cause many great damages, and it not only is not conducive, but it prevents conducive understanding. A person shouldn't fool himself and think, I'll be able to understand it, because with one own understanding, one cannot attain the correct understanding. Rak ra'a, the only thing one can attain is bad for himself. Ki yidabru el Hashem sara. Because when one learns Kabbalistic concepts, there is a very fine line between Kabbalistic concepts and idolatry. We know idolatry is yarek val yavo. One should rather give up one's life rather than serve idols. And the Kabbalah speaks in terminology which one who tries to understand and is not on the level to understand and does not have the tradition to understand can very easily misunderstand and will definitely misunderstand. And not only does he not gain, but he loses. So the Ramban says, don't try to understand when you read that I make allusions to Kabbalistic concepts, because if you don't have a tradition from a rabbi who taught you, and you're not fitting yet to get that tradition, so then you cannot attain a correct understanding of what I'm going to write. And not only are you not gaining, but you're losing. And the Ramban expands about how much a person is really harming himself when he tries to apply his own understanding without tradition. Now that being said, we're holding by the fourth chapter of Tomer Dvorah, where Rav Moshe Kordovirov starts explaining this fourth attribute of God with Kabbalistic terms. And we can't really understand what he's talking about. No, we need a tradition. We need to be on a level to understand it. And we have to be fearful of what the Ramban writes, that if one tries to understand with his own intellect, not only will he not be successful, but he's in effect harming himself. He's attaining understandings that most likely are idol worship, are forbidden. They're not part of Judaism. I would like nonetheless to begin the fourth chapter so that we acquaint ourselves with the concept that Rav Moshe Kordovirov is going to tell us. And then we'll skip a little bit and continue. People say that. There might be people who hold that, but what I've seen in the sources, and I've only quoted a few, the Chavot Yair, the Ramban, we just saw, is that we're even talking about learning. Even learning, because when we start talking about concepts like Sfirot, numbers, and that numbers have powers, you're suddenly introducing yourself to concepts that on the surface are idolatry. What does it mean that there's a power out there? What does it mean that there's a female aspect and a male aspect? All these concepts are difficult to understand, and on the surface, they are not Jewish. Only when one can really attain the depth of understanding can one understand why this doesn't contradict the first of the Ten Commandments, that Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am Hashem, your God. Now, in order for a person to attain that understanding, he has to be on a level to attain, and he has to have a teacher who's on a level and who can explain it correctly. that's why you see the Chavot Yair, Rav Yair Bachrach. He was one of the great sages. He wrote his Tshuva Sefer, he wrote Malkishisha Dictionary. He wrote a few works, and he was a great rabbi. I mean, the rabbis quote him and rely on him. Like, if he says something, it's almost like you found it in Shulchan Aruch. A sage writes to him. He says, I've been learning for many, many, many years. The man must be 60, 70 years old. And he tells him, I've already covered the Shas, and I've mastered such and such and such and such, and I've been contemplating whether it's the time yet for me to open up a book of Kabbalah or not. Have I reached the stage yet? And you see the way the Chavot Yair answers him, that this man was way ahead of where I'd say most, if not all, the rabbis today are. You're talking about someone who's way ahead, and someone who's been learning for many, many, many years. And nonetheless, he's doubtful whether he's reached the stage where he's entitled to start learning Kabbalah. Now, the Sfaradim have a different approach to Kabbalah. What I'm saying is all Ashkenazi. The Sfaradim seem to have a different approach. I don't know enough about it to say anything. But what I'm quoting isn't Sfaradi or Ashkenazi. It's the Ramban. It was a Sfaradi. The Chavot Yair. Okay.
He was living in southern France, right?
I don't remember. Rav Moshe Cordoviro has been analyzing, explaining the Pasuk in Micha, Mikel Kamocha, and going every 2-3 words explaining how this is another attribute of God's and how we're supposed to derive from that, how we're supposed to behave. And now we're up to the words Lisherit Nachlato. We said, the verse had said that God is, who is like you, God, who is willing to sustain our sin, to forgo our rebelliousness for the people of Israel who are the remnants of his portion. Lisherit Nachlato. Now, the word she'er, literally understood, is the remnants. That God does this for the remnants of his inheritance, his portion, the Jewish people. This is how God behaves with us. Omer, God, so to speak, says, what could I do for Israel? They are my beloved. She'er b'sar yesh li imahem. They are an extension of my flesh, so to speak. When we speak about a person's wife, she's not his finger. She's not an extension of him. His son is more of an extension of him than his wife. His son, that's really began biologically from part of his body. His wife grew up somewhere else. They get together, they marry. And nonetheless, we refer to the wife as she'er, the extension, a piece of his flesh. So God, by the same token, speaks of the Jewish people as though we're so to speak, his counterpart. God says, I'm singular in heaven, and I've made you singular down on earth. You're responsible to represent God on earth, to be godly beings, to behave in a holy fashion. So God says, what can I do for the Jewish people? I'm so close to them. They're like my wife. Sharei hem batzug l'Hakadosh Baruch Hu. We are, so to speak, God's mate. V'korela biti achoti imi. And in God's affection, God sometimes calls us my beloved daughter. And we know that daughter was a term of affection. Many of the rabbis, when they spoke to their wives, instead of saying sweetheart, they'd say my daughter. It was a term of affection. They'd say my sister. And we know that sister, even today, is a term of affection. Just like you say brother, ach. So, achi, right? So you'll say achoti.
But can you say to one of your friends, achi?
Today, in modern slang, it's still a term of affection. In the hoods, they also say brother, right?
What?
In the slums, you also say brother, right? So.
No, but I'm saying in a normal Jewish fashion, can you call one of your...
In Israel, it's very accepted to say achi.
What about in Pusar?
I don't know. And the Medrash says in Shir HaShirim that God went so far as to call us my mother, which is the greatest term of affection, which needs explanation. Why is that the greatest term of affection? More than my wife, my beloved, my sister, my daughter is my mother. V'chtiv, in the verse says, Yisrael am kirovo, Yisrael, my nation that is close to me. Mamashku vayeshlo imahem uvanavim. God is really close to us. We are called God's sons. V'hainu lisherit nachlato. And that's what the verse means. Even though the simple understanding is that the verse is speaking about the remnants of God's portion, the remnants of the Jewish people, Rav Moshe Kordoviro is saying the verse means his portion, which is his extension. The Jewish people, so to speak, are an extension of God, l'shon she'er basal, like an extension of flesh, v'sof sofem nachlato. And bottom line, we are, so to speak, God's inheritance, we are God's portion in this world. U'ma omar, and God says, what can I do? What can I say? Ima ani shem, if I punish them, harei hakev alai, I'm hurting myself. Until I was a parent, I never understood this. That when a parent punishes a child, very often it's more difficult for the parent than the child.
Somebody says it's going to hurt me a lot more than it's going to hurt me.
Right, so I always thought it was a joke. I always thought it was a joke. But when I became a parent, I once called my mother and I said, is it normal that when I have to punish the child, I can sometimes go to the room and cry? She said to me, are you kidding? You know how many times I punish you and go to the room and cry myself afterwards? Of course it's much harder for the parent than the child. So God is saying, what can I do for the Jewish people? They are my extension, so to speak, my counterpart. And if I would punish them, it hurts me. As the verse states, that whenever it's difficult for the Jewish people, God says it's difficult for me. And here already he's going into all kinds of Kabbalistic concepts. So we're going to skip all this. Kacha adam im chaveru. So we just skipped the end of the sentence, really. A person with his friend is just like God says to us. That's Rav Moshe Kordoviro's whole theme here, how we're supposed to learn from God's attributes. So just like God says, you're an extension of me, and what could I do to benefit you? Because if I hurt you, it hurts me. So too, when we think of our fellow man, we should recognize that he's an extension of us as well. Kol Yisrael em she'er basar elu imelu. All of Israel are really an extension, one big body, and we're all an extension of flesh from one another. Mipnei shanshamot klulot yachad, because our neshamas are really united. Yesh bezeh chelek zeh uvezeh chelek zeh. Really, we're all part of one neshama. When we say there's a heartbeat beating within us, so we say there is also a communal heartbeat. There's a communal neshama. And this is a concept also in halacha. We say tzibur lo mit. The congregation never dies. If a person takes a vow, I will not benefit anything from this congregation, he cannot say, well, all these people died. I outlived all of them. Now I could benefit from the congregation. We say, wait a second. The congregation continues. When this one dies, another one's born, another one joins. As a congregation, the congregation always lives. So when we look at the neshama, we also say we're all an extension of one another. And that's why we say that when you have a lot of people performing a mitzvah, it has much more weight than a single person, because their whole is much more than the parts. When you have 15 people doing a mitzvah, it's not 1 plus 1 plus 1 15 times, but rather it's a whole. And we say it's a communal neshama. Ulekach b'shur azal, ananim nem asra roshonim bebet ha-kneset, afilu mea be'im achav mekabez schach neged kulam. That's why our sages taught us a person should try to get to shul first, because if you're one of the first 10, then you're the one that brings down, so to speak, this communal neshama. Now everyone else that joins, you get sachar like everyone. So you come to a big shul, a shul that's going to have 150 people, you're from the first 10, so then Chazal say you get sachar like all 150, because you're the one that brought down this communal neshama.
But what about if there is not enough people if I can, as a dance, so is it?
So that, Bezat Shem, in our halachic class, we'll discuss. Me'a mamash kemashma'o, and here again, he starts discussing the fact that it's specifically 100, because 100 is 10 series of 10, and we just said that 10 is where the Shekhinah comes down. V'chen mitam ze Yisrael aravim ze azen. This is the philosophical reason why we say each Jew is responsible for one another. Because we consider it as though each of us is an extension of the other. We say in halacha, why is it that if I make kiddush, I can make kiddush for someone else? Because I haven't fulfilled my obligation until every Jew has finished fulfilling their obligation. So I'm still obligated. He hasn't done his kiddush, so I'm making it for him. He's saying this in a slightly different vein. He's saying that the fact that someone else hasn't done it means I haven't done it, because part of him is in me and part of me is in him. We're connected.
Wasn't the first brought up when Cain said to Hashem?
The what?
He says, where's the...
Says, nope,
my brother's keeper. My responsible for my brother. So
in this
he says, oh yeah, you are.
Very nice. I didn't think that. And when one person sins, he not only is harming himself, he's harming his friend. And that's why we're responsible for one another. Because if someone else is doing something wrong, he's harming me, he's not only harming himself. So we consider ourselves extensions of one another. So we have one more, two more sentences. We'll finish this section for today. That's why we all have to work on ourselves to want what's good for our fellow man, and to look fondly upon things that happen good for other people. And ordinarily we're not that way. Our nature is to be tzarayim, to look skimpily at one another. If there's a plate of cake that comes to the table, everyone wants to make sure to get the piece that they want. And if someone else takes it, they're not happy with it. Well, we're all that way. Kol hakavod. So we're all supposed to work to try and look fondly upon giving other people. And this isn't an easy thing. This is one of God's traits. And he's telling us that one of the ways in which we can attain this is when we start recognizing that there's an extension of me in someone else. We're accustomed to thinking that he's a representative of God. He has Tzelem Elokim. He's saying a different angle. He's saying, think of it as he's an extension of me. When a person has a child, so any normal person wants his child to have, things should be good for him. And not only does he want things to be good for him, my mother asked me the other day, what have you been eating these days? Now, my wife's in the hospital, my son's in the hospital, what have you been eating these days? So I said, I don't have meals. I eat the kids' leftovers. Every time, whatever they don't finish eating, I eat. Because, unfortunately, they have a lot of leftovers. They don't like eating a lot. But the idea is that when you're coming to eat with your child, you don't think, well, I want the better piece of cake, I want the better piece of meat. You think, he needs the vitamins, let him have it. Whatever he won't eat, I'll eat. And the person doesn't feel badly because it's his son. So if we'd feel that other people are also an extension of ourselves, then we'd also feel positively about the fact that they're getting good. We'd want them to have good. So he's telling us one of the ways to acquire a good eye is to recognize that that's an extension of me. And then we'll want our friend's honor just as we want ours. For in recognizing this, we recognize that he is me and I am he in this spiritual sense. We're connected. There's a part of me in him. And that's why the Torah commands us, love your friend like yourself. What does it mean like yourself? Because there's a part of yourself in him. And by the same token, it's fitting that a person will want what's just, what's right by his friend. And a person won't speak about the other person's shame and won't want the other person's shame. Ordinarily we do. And a person is supposed to attain the level where he doesn't want the other person's shame. The same way that God doesn't want our shame or our pain, because God is close to us. Af hu, so to a person lo yirtze bignut chavero, shouldn't want his friend's shame, velo b'tzaro, nor in his friend's pain, velo b'kilkulo, nor in his friend's falling, ve'yera lo mimenu ke'ilu hu mamash haya shorui b'oto tzaro b'ota tova. And it'll hurt him when something bad happens to his friend, as though he himself is in that difficult situation, or when things go well, he'll look fondly upon it as though he himself got these good things. So in summation, Rav Moshe Kotvir told us in this fourth chapter that God treats us as an extension of him, so to speak, as God's counterpart, and because we're an extension of God, God says, I don't want to punish them, it hurts me, so to speak, if something hurts them. By the same token, we're supposed to look at someone else and realize that all of Israel are one, and there's an extension of us in them, and that's why we have a power as a whole, as a unit of a tzibur. Once we have 10 people together, that has a communal neshama, so to speak, And when once we recognize there's a part of us in other people, it's natural that from there we will recognize or come to want what's good for other people and look with a good eye at good things happening to other people and only want what's good for other people.
You said to say that those words is to say the more human needs as an image.
So that, Bezrat Hashem, maybe after we finish this, we'll start learning the Nefesh HaChayim. That's also a Kabbalistic word. And there the first thing he discusses is what is the word Tzelem. There's one place where it says, B'dmut Elokim Asalto, we were made in God's Dmut, which literally would probably mean God's shape, but God doesn't have a shape. So if it were fashioned like God, what does that mean? So all these words have to be defined. What is Tzelem? What is Dmut? Bezrat Hashem, when we get to Nefesh HaChayim, we'll discuss it.
Whatever it is that is similar to me, that's what we share with each other, yeah?
Ordinarily we say that we... Not that that's what we share with each other. When we look at someone else, if we'd be on the right level, so we'd see Tzel Malokim. We'd see a representation of God. And we'd be able to see the positive in it.
We'd see ourselves.
Not ourselves. I'm saying, Ramosh Kordvir brought a second point. I don't think it's the same. I think it's two different points. Ordinarily, what people say is, you can want what's good for someone else if you recognize that he's godly. If you recognize he's representative of God, no one ever thinks, I want to shoot God. I might feel like I'm upset with God, I'm hurt by God, but a person doesn't really feel, I want to hurt God. A person can feel, I have an issue, I'm bothered by something. But I don't think people usually want to, it's not like to fight back, it's to give word to what's hurting them inside. If I'd recognize that you're godly, that you're a representation of God, then I'd want what's good for you. Then I'd treat you with more dignity, then I wouldn't want to harm you. He's saying a different point, that we should recognize that there's a part of me in you. And just like I wouldn't want to hurt my son, I wouldn't want to hurt you.